join me in a prayer before we hand all of our time over to Mr. Raja. Father, thank you for everything you've done for us. Please, please be in this room with us. Please guide Eric's words. Give him the wisdom to know what to say to get the maximum benefit. Squeeze every ounce of knowledge that he has and bestow it to us. There's a lot, though, so it's kind of how do you pick the best, the cream of the crop? Please give him that wisdom. Be with each person listening. You know what contexts we're in, and things are slightly different for each person, so let them hear and remember the main points that they need to hear and remember. We give ourselves to you now, Father. We need you. Pray in your name. Amen. All right. Okay. Time is yours.
Thank you very much, Sean. It's people like Sean that inspire me to do these things because it impacts a lot of young people. I see a lot of young people here, so thank you very much for coming. And this is going to be interactive because most of you have a lot of wisdom sitting here. Some of you I've known for many, many years. So I hope this will be interactive. A farmer said one time that he went out with a load of hay and there was only one cow, so he decided not to unload all of the hay. So I'll do the same thing here. just to give you enough. I know all of you are involved in church and raising money. I actually have a passion for raising money because you can make a difference. It's a difficult job. So what I'm going to share with you is not so much theory, but things that I have learned over the years. Practical things, from small things to big things. So I'll start with that. Then we'll see for those who are benefiting online, listening to this. Let's see. These are the topics I would like to quickly touch with you on. I'll come closer so I can read it myself. What we have here are three things. Where do you start? Often the question people ask, where do I start? And then they say, how to create the plan and how to execute and follow up. That's basically the three topics that I like to cover with everyone here and listening online. So let's take a look at a couple of things very quickly. Where do you start? I always say start with why. It's important to know why you're doing what you're doing. If I ask you what you do, you can probably tell me without too much difficulty what you do. You might be retired, you might be a pastor of a church, elder. But if I ask you why you do it, that's always a bit harder to think about. So let's look at that why for a minute, which is important when you go to fundraise. And start with the vision and start with understanding people. These are things that I have learned over the years. So let's take a look at this. I don't know whether you've heard of Simon Sinek or not. If not, it's worth having your church members and your leaders look at this video. It's a short, I'm not going to show that to you today. Just wanted you to make notes. By the way, you don't have to furiously write everything down. I'll send you this PowerPoint. I'll email it to you so you'll have it, right? Unless you want to pick up something. It's hard to listen and watch and interact. So don't worry about it. If you see something important to you, write it down. Otherwise, I'll send it to you. I'll get your email. I'll give you my email. Write to me and I'll quickly send it to you. All right, this guy, Simon Sinek, if you haven't heard of him, he has become one of the great leaders in helping people think about why they do what they do. So it's a 15-minute TED Talk. There's also a whole book on it that you can listen. Come on in. If you want to come up closer, you can. It's same price for the seats. So feel free to come and join, or unless you're going somewhere else. All right. So take a look at this video when you get there. A TED Talk by Start With Why. It will be very good for you to look at. Okay, let's leave that alone for now. So a vision. Let's start with why and a vision. I find people always say, I want to build a dormitory or I want to buy some chairs. I prefer to start with the vision of why you're doing what you're doing. So let's take a look at that a little bit. So here is the better world I started. I never said I want to build school. We said we want to make the world better. You never know what that's going to look like. It could be schools, it could be water, it could be food, it could be many things. So it's good to start that way. Here's another one. The library campaign for Burman. When I started, they said they want a library. I said, no, we don't want a library. We want a vision. The reason we want the library to help shape young people's lives so they can make a change in the world. That's the vision. And so that overrides everything. I have some materials I'll give you also when we're done. Here's another one that I've been thinking about lately. How about if people simply gave without being asked? Now, wouldn't that be the day when you'd come here and people will say, let's give. They're doing such good work. This conference is doing such great work with Sandy Lake. Let's just start giving them the money that they need. Okay, that would be a very lofty vision. So think about vision this way. When NASA wanted to go up to the moon, they came up with a vision. They said they want to go to the moon. And some people said, no, that's not a vision. What would have happened if the vision was to go to the moon now? It would have been over. Right? Finished. They went to the moon. Game is over. Instead, they said, our vision is to explore the universe. There's no limit to it then. You go to the moon, you go to the Venus, you go to wherever you want to go. So think about a vision that will be working like this. Now, this will be very hard. To get alumni should be giving to Burman without being asked, because Burman does such good work. So the vision is there, and not so much every month, every week, hounding the people to give money. That's what fundraising people do. All right. Let me look at this one a little bit more clearly. Yes. Yes, yes. The alumni of Burman or any place, church members for that matter, should feel that church is doing such good work, they shouldn't have to be hounded to give money. They should be willing to give. So giving without being asked. Right? Not everybody is going to be there, but that's what the aim is. The vision is that you do such good work, even when you go to ask, people say, hey, we'd like to be part of it. Okay, we'll look at some of the things where I've been able to bring a better world together. People give without being asked, a lot of them. You still have to remind them to give, but they willingly come to that. Okay, let's look at this one. This is actually a fascinating one for me. There's an auto show that they have in Detroit. All the new cars are revealed. So the presidents of this company go, and people ask them questions. What is your vision? So the Ford, the GM, all those people got up, and they said, we want to make a fuel-efficient vehicle. We want to build the cheapest car out there so that people in developing countries can have it. We want to develop electric cars. All these kinds of vision is what they were interested in. Except this man got up and he gave a completely different vision. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. I'm giving a little workshop on how to raise money. If you have money, you can give it and leave, or you can wait and learn. All right. Good. I'm talking a little bit about vision when you go to raise money. And as I said to this gentleman earlier, I'm only sharing with you things that have worked for me. It may not work for you, but you might be able to modify it what has worked. I'll also tell you things that haven't worked for me as well when you get to the end. We're talking about vision. So when you're raising money, start with the vision. And so I was sharing this, I'm going to share this story in a minute. These people who make cars, the presidents were called to give a little idea of what their vision was for their auto companies. And they said, we want to build the cheapest car. We want to make sure it's affordable to people in developing countries. Except this guy. This man, who is president of Volvo, said, I have only one vision. I don't care how many cars we sell, how rich we become. My vision is anybody who drives a Volvo should never be seriously injured or hurt in the vehicle. See, that's a vision. It's not to make the cheapest car, not to make the most fuel-efficient car. Then he went on to say, when we find out, we will share that with everybody else. So everyone who drives the car will be safe. So they invented the blind spot, and they gave it to everybody else too. I'm sure they charged for it, but even if they didn't, that was the vision. Their vision was to create this. Now, needless to say, I do have a Volvo. I bought the vision. So God forbid I don't die in one of these cars. I don't mind dying anywhere, but I don't want to die in a Volvo. So I don't know much about vehicles, but the vision actually inspired me to think about the things that we say and do. All right. So first principle is this. Sell the vision, create the vision, and get donors to buy into the vision first. I'll give you some examples about that. So why people give? Here is the thing that I've learned from fundraising. Thank you, Chris and Marilyn, for coming over here. Two ways to influence people. Well, you can inspire them, or you can manipulate them. If you inspire them, these are the results. You'll get deep relationships with people. You will get repeat donations, long-term sustainability, visionary gifts, and they will want to give. If you manipulate them, which is what sometimes fundraising people do, they tell them it's urgent, people are dying, this, that, then you manipulate them. You work with their feelings. And so those relationships are shallow. They just respond to the envelopes. I hate these envelopes because it's not visionary. Just we need money for this, 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 and this. Even if it was titled differently, I'm just using this not for here, but for everybody else. If they said, this section to help others, this section to help the church grow, then you put all those things down there. Then the people will catch the vision. So what we have here is they'll find excuses not to give. When I was doing the library at Berman, I found out some of the people said, ah, Berman will never go anywhere. We shouldn't be investing in the library. What they were really saying was that they didn't want to give. And that happens. I used to recruit for Berman. Parents didn't want to send their children, so they have all kinds of reasons to say that. So that's what happens when you manipulate people and it becomes urgent. So it's better to inspire them. Then you can build that relationship for the long term. So don't scare the donors. Okay, let's look at the theory of giving. This is something I learned over the years. People don't give you because you have a need. You need to get this through your mind. People give because they have a need to give. And that's what you need to be focusing on. Just because you have a need, people don't come through. They may come through short term, but you have to figure out they have a need to give. So I'll give you a couple of examples on that. When I started the library project for myself, it was a big job. I was scared spitless. It was $6 million that needed to be raised. It has been tried 4 or 5 times at Berman to try to do these things. When I was a student 40 years ago, they wanted to do this thing. But I have the need to give back to Berman. I didn't care what anybody thought. I didn't care whether I was going to be successful or not. But I wanted to leave something that's beyond me for Berman because of the change it has made in my life. So it really didn't matter. So because I had a need to give, I took that project on. Do you follow what I'm saying? People give because they have a need. I like people who don't go to church. You might all get a heart attack when I say that. But think about it a little bit deeply. Why do you think I love people who don't go to church? Well, think about all the people who don't go to church. If you go to church, you ask for money every week. How about all those people who aren't going to church? They are my market. That's how A Better World started. $1.8 million every year comes from people who don't go to church, because they don't go to church. And they don't have a gateway to find organizations to give. All right, now I'm not suggesting that that's what the market that we are dealing with. I'm just telling you, don't set your sights for your humanitarian work within your church, just with your church members. In fact, the church members give a lot. They have church school, they have church budget, they have conference, they have camp, all kinds of things like that. So this is why I think for other causes, there are people who don't go to church, and we could reach out to them by asking them to get involved and engaged. So think about that a little bit more carefully. All right, because people have a need to give. People have a need to give, and feel free to ask questions too. All right, let's look at a couple of other things. This is something I learned dealing with mainly with the people who don't get an opportunity to be part of a church congregation, mainly on my Better World side. One of the first things we started looking at is you need to uncover the unmet needs of people. Okay, let's think about that for a minute. So what would be an example like that? So let's take some wealthy people. They already have a second house. They already done their vacation. They already have their motorhome. They have a lake property. Their children are grown up. They still have needs. How do you uncover those needs that are not met? And one of those needs towards the end of their life is to give back to the community, give back to society. So once you uncover those unmet needs, it becomes very easy. In my case, for A Better World anyways, when I started doing this humanitarian work, my customers started coming and asking me about it. They didn't ask me about what church I go or what I believe. They said, why are you doing this? Oh, I see you're going to Africa. You're building schools. They said, we'd like to do that. We want to be part of it. We have arrived at a stage in our life. What will give us meaning to life is what we do for other people. So in the community, that's what you're looking for. Uncover the unmet needs of people and then meet those needs. And that's easy to say, but it takes long-term relationship to find out. And we'll get into some specifics when you have questions. The other thing I always have learned is open the hearts of the people. Don't open the wallets. If you try to open the wallets, you'll never open it wide enough. You'll never will, believe me. But if you open the people's hearts, they will open their wallets so wide that you'll never expect that could happen. So always fundraisers always go to the wallet. We need this. We need this. $10 a month, $50 a month, we'll do this thing. People get engaged, they take the wallet, knock on the door, they'll give it to you. But opening the heart takes long, and once you open it, very few people will close it. You ask that for yourself, the things that you give it to, right? All right. And finally, what's important is this. I learned this also through example, which I'll share with you when I give you some materials. Everybody listens to one radio station. Do you know what that is? Everybody listens to one radio station. Something else everyone listens to. I listen to CBC too. WIIFM stands for What's in It for Me. Right? That is the radio station everybody listens to every day. What's in it for me? So people always say, I'm very humble in my giving. I don't want anybody to know. There are some people who genuinely say that. But a lot of people like to be appreciated for what they do. I had an interesting experience with the library. So it was $6 million. I divide the library up into sections. This is worth $100,000. this is worth 50 and so on and so on. And I said, you can honor somebody by buying this space. I didn't tell them they can honor themselves. They could. Some people did. For example, I could say, this lounge area donated by Eric and Candy. Or I could say, in honor of my teachers, Warren Trenchard, which I did, a gift from Eric and Candy Roger. That made a lot more meaning to me than kind of honoring myself in there. So I put this out there. You would not believe $3.5 million came just from that one idea. Why? People said, I need to honor and remember somebody. My parents who made a difference. My pastor, my teacher. So you can see that's how you reach out to the people's hearts. And interestingly, the people who say, I don't want my name to be on the library, there were more people calling me to have their name on it than I would have ever thought of. Not because they wanted to, because they wanted to honor somebody else, which was a very nice way to leave a legacy for the people that made a difference in your life. All right, so let's go on to some other practical things in a minute. Okay, how do you create a plan? Let's talk about this. This is just general stuff, things you probably already know, just need to put it together in some sequence. Gratitude campaign. How many times, I know some of your pastors here, so I'm not stepping on your toes, but how many times has a pastor written a thank you card for the member because they faithfully gave their tithe or the church budget? I've been in my church for 42 years. I've given 10% of my income. And I was blessed. Have I ever received a thank you card from a pastor, say, Eric, you've been here 42 years, and you made such a difference in my church. So when I ask the people that, they say, God blesses you. So I tell them, I'm going to give it to God. You don't get nothing for the church. I'll figure out a way to give it to God. So what I'm trying to say is, the first thing before you launch a fundraising campaign, is to make sure that there's a gratitude campaign going. So when I took on the library, because I live around Berman, I know a lot of the inside things, which is very true of many organizations. They only remember you when they need your money. Have you felt that way? Right? People come to you when they need your money. Once they get your money, then what happens? Until the next need. So this is typically what happened to me. Welcome. When I went to Berman to start this campaign for the library. First I said, when was the last time anybody got seriously thanked? Last time was 25 years ago when the science building was built. All the donors had already gone. Some died. We were even sending letters to the people who were dead because we didn't know that they had died, right? So the point is, start with the gratitude campaign. So when I first went there, I told the president, listen, I want 1 year to do a gratitude campaign. No money is going to be raised. People have not been thanked enough for all the sacrifice they have made for Berman to make a difference. That's where we need to start. So the full year, I went around, thanked people. And what do you think the people said? What can we do for you? What else can we do for you? So always start with the gratitude campaign. Luckily for me, Dr. Agri, the president, is very good at acknowledging people's gifts. So when the gift comes in, he has a set of thank you cards on his desk. He will handwrite the thank you note. They'll get their formal receipts and everything. But Lauren will write a thank you card. Another person that's good is Vic Fitch. He was the campaign chair. Every donation got a thank you card. It didn't matter if it was $10 or $100,000. Question. We prefer a handwritten short note. Thank you, received your letter. And sometimes I'll send an email because I get notified when a donation comes. And then Lauren might send a handwritten thank you. Or Vic Fitch, the other person who shared the campaign with me, would send a thank you. There's one thing I can tell you. I haven't seen anybody who has died because they have been over-thanked for a gift. So don't worry about how many times you have to say thank you, right? Do it in a way that makes sense. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. But remember, I'm talking about smaller organization. Now, World Vision President, who sends out a million letters, may not be able to do that. But he can have some of his staff do that. So even within a better world, I have other people who will write the note in there. Sometimes we'll rotate it. But that's the number one thing I try to do every week, is to write a thank you note to somebody in there. Genuinely. Sometimes I know them personally, so I'll write a little note. How is your daughter doing? Or it was nice to see you at camp meeting, whatever it is. Okay? So don't minimize the importance of the gratitude campaign. So those of you who are in churches, go back and tell your pastor it's okay to send a thank you letter. Even though he doesn't get the tithe, it's okay to tell the church member that they appreciate the support. Okay? Next thing is a campaign strategy. We'll talk about that. Then we'll talk about some measurable things. All right, I'm trying to frame the big picture of fundraising that oftentimes in a seminar like this, people tell you how to get people's money. I'm not so much as interested in that as getting the people engaged with their hearts in the things that we want to do. All right, so here is a campaign, gratitude campaign, thank you letters or cards, appreciation program, have an appreciation dinner. This month and next month, we're doing what we call an evening of gratitude. We're so close to finishing the library. So August 15, Lauren and Vic are going to California for something else. We're going to send an invitation to everybody, whether they gave or not, to come so that we can say thank you to them. And thank you is not a time to ask for more money. But believe me, people will ask, and we will go prepared in case they should ask, what is it, the next thing they would like to do. Okay, let's look at, yes. Yeah, timing. Good question. Timing is important. Don't wait 3 months to send a thank you for a gift. Try to do it that same week if you can, if you're small enough. If you're big enough, might be a problem. Do you need some instructions from me? Oh, okay, good point. All right, thank you for the tip. When somebody asks a question, I'm supposed to repeat it so the people online can hear it. Okay, so the question was about timing, and don't wait too long. Make sure you have a system. Make sure thank you is there. On the Better World side and on the Berman side, because I run both sides of it, I expect to have a list every week of people who have donated, already an envelope addressed on my desk in the middle of the week. And I'll make sure I stop everything, write a note, make sure it gets in the mail. That's the most important thing that I do. It doesn't matter what the amount is in there. All right, let's look at strategy here. All right, this might look a little complicated, but don't worry. It's a simple plan. For those of you just need this stuff, I'll email it to you. So you don't have to make any notes. Right. So don't worry too much about this. This is an actual one I did for the Red Deer Soup Kitchen. I saw some very good ladies who work very hard, but really didn't know much about fundraising. They're good at what they do. If I cook at the soup kitchen, nobody will come. So maybe they wouldn't need any money. But these people genuinely do it. So one day they said, we're struggling. Can you give us some help? So I sat down with them. They knew more about that business than I would. So always kind of get one slide like this in your mind. What is a soup kitchen? What do they do? The three things that they do. And so you have a clear picture. The last thing you want to do when you're talking to donors is to be wishy-washy. If they look like you don't know where you're going, they're not going to come. They're not going to follow. You have to be clearly outlined with them. I'll get a little bit more specific about this in a minute. So what we have are the three main focuses of the soup kitchen. This is what they do. They meet people's physical need, they meet their spiritual needs, and they meet their social and emotional needs. And what do they do under each one? And there are three different things that they do for each thing. So just get them clear in your head. I had an interesting example when I started the library project. A man called me up from Edmonton. He said, I'd like to give you some money, but I don't believe in the library. Now, he's an ophthalmologist, well-educated. And I said, I need the money desperately for the library. But his heart was not in it. So I listened to him. And he said, I'd like to give you $1 million, but it cannot go to the library. I expected this at the beginning of the campaign. So actually, I had a three-part campaign. A library campaign, which had a finite time limit. We wanted to build it and get it over with. Then we had a student success campaign, which included scholarship, missions, and things like that. Then I had another one to improve the faculty training and equipment and things like that. So because I had three, he said, I like to give it to the student scholarship fund. So otherwise, there have been $1 million gone right out of the table. So don't worry about having two or three options ready. So now that the library is finished, I can continue to work on the other two campaigns, which really doesn't have a time limit. You know, the endowment fund can go on forever. Loma Linda has an endowment fund, the president was telling me, for 25 years. They want to raise $1 billion over 25 years so the interest can be used for the students. All right, so always remember that. If people don't want to give to this building, make sure you have a campaign to buy new padded pews or something like that. All right, so. No, their plan is a 25-year campaign. The question is this. How much did Loma Linda raise for their 1 billion student aid campaign? I don't know that number. It's over 25 years. But they have a plan. For people who don't want to give to some things, they can drop it into the student aid fund. That's the main message here. Have a couple of other options there. All right, let's move on here. I don't want to get too detailed here. All I did was took one of these big circles and then put a little bit more detailed plan. When I email it to you, you can read this a little bit more carefully. So just take a model and take a look at what you're doing. So I'll give you an example. So let's say I heard a good report from Sandy Lake yesterday sitting here. They grow it, they paid their debt off. Perfect timing to start a high school. I don't know all the details about it. I'm not pushing any one thing or another, but the timing was right. The message was clear. We have no debt, paid the conference, our enrollment is up, there's a community that's going to be developing. It might be a perfect opportunity to do that. But then, don't ask for a high school building. Ask for the vision. Vision for the community. Vision to grow our young people. So, for example, some people at Berman said, we want to buy a bus. So right away, my mind says, go rent a bus. Well, you're buying a bus. It's costly. You have to pay insurance. Your thing doesn't operate 3 months out of the year. Go rent one and be done with it. Because they were not articulating their vision. Their vision is to have health testing inside the bus, lectures, seminars, videos, and so on. The vision should be, help us improve the lives of young people through our mission. Bus is one of those tools to make it happen. That's much more engaging than saying, help me buy a bus. Right? So think about those kinds of things. All right, let's skip all this. People like to know that you have a plan. When you're raising money, the worst thing is not to have a plan. Even if the plan may be idealistic, don't make it too idealistic because people have to believe that you're going to make this happen, right? So every month I would give a report like this, either to the board or to my colleagues who work with me. Okay, here is my plan. September to December, we're going to raise $250,000. Here are the four steps we're going to do to get there. From, can read it from here, to April, 350. From May to August, 300. From September to December of this year, we would raise 1.5 million, and here is the plan. Now, you have to change this, because I'm projecting this into the future. But fortunately for me, we actually now down to the last $300,000 when I only projected that we'd have 1.5 million by the end of this year. Why is that? It's not because of me, because you have a plan and you work the plan. You make a realistic plan, you start chipping away every day at that thing. All right. Okay, let's go to some other things here. Okay, let's look at types of campaigns, bringing people on the journey, tactics, and reporting. Let's look at each one of those quickly. All right, you can have mass campaigns. Now, I may be overwhelming you by the large dollars that you may not be thinking about, but I also go and help children in school raise $650. I just did that this last month. Some kids wanted to buy some desks for a school in Africa. They said, come and help us. So it's okay. I want to get them engaged when they are in grade 5 and 6 to start giving back. So don't be overwhelmed by these large numbers. The principles are the same for the small ones. All right, so you can have personal campaign, mass campaigns. Mass campaigns are where you simply send letters out and you hope to get something out of it. But I think many of us don't work in those circles. We have smaller needs. Church renovations, repairs, I've done all that for our church. Those things come from basically personal campaigns. So what should you do with personal campaigns? Number one is, before I launch a campaign, let's say $6 million need to be raised or $1 million, I make sure I have 50% of the people already committed. Otherwise, you're dead. To start a campaign of $6 million with zero commitment, you won't go anywhere. I can tell you that. So you want to go and start visiting people. You want to share the vision with them one-on-one. I'll show you some materials for those people in a minute. And then you will go and try to talk to them and get them committed. Now, many of them will hesitate to commit. I've had people come to me and say, I don't think I'm going to do this. This is the fourth time you guys have tried this. I don't think I'm going to cut a check right now. So you tell them, just make a commitment. When I'm ready, I'll come to you. When I have all the pieces put together, then I'll come. And that'll always work. Because if they commit, they will keep their money. And then you need to go back to them very quickly. Yes. Yeah, the comment is, Jerry Lewis, who did these Fornathon campaigns, had this money committed long before they opened up the TV. That happens all the time in Canada. The money is already there. So that's why you see those numbers going. 500,000 in 10 minutes, it's 700. Right? Nobody has called you, but you have the money sitting in there. So that urges your $10 and $50 people to come through. All right. And use testimonials. Yesterday, it was very effective when Sandy Lake showed a family who is not even members of our church who were talking about that. Overcome objections. People will object when you go to ask for money. This is what I find. When I go to ask for money, people give you advice and not money. When you ask for advice, they'll give you money and not the advice. All right? So be prepared to be able to listen and respond genuinely. And don't try to pull any tricks. People aren't born yesterday. And you just genuinely tell them. I don't like to beg people for money because the money is not for me. The money is to make a difference in somebody else's life. So I'm never ashamed, never embarrassed how many times I get turned down. Because the money is not for me. It's to make a difference. There's nothing more fun than seeing people part with their money. And you want to have them do it happily. All right, let's look at solving a problem. What do I mean like that? Mean by that? People like to be part of solving a problem. Okay, you don't want to go tell them about the library. You want to tell them about a problem that they can be part of solving. So think about that in all of your fundraising. I want to make this world better. One way to do is to build some schools. Can you help me build schools? Your end goal is to make the world better. So think about getting the people into solving a problem. Okay? People like to be part of it. And always show how the present condition is and how it will be improved. So when we started the Berman Library campaign, we showed them the cafeteria that Pastor Crook used to eat. And then it became a library. So we showed them that. It was 70 years old. Young people are not going to the library. It's not the kind of way they look at library. They want study rooms. They want lounge chairs. And so library is not a quiet place anymore for the old people like me, where we went and just kept quiet and studied. Now students come. I go to the library at Berman. They come. They are talking. There are places for them to go into a room and study, things like that. All right. So think about solving a problem that's happening. It's okay to use things like this. I'll show you actual examples in a minute. And that is, you find donors to match the donation. People like to double their money. So this year when the student started a campaign, I went to another alumnus and I said, hey, students are starting this campaign. Would you consider matching this? Oh, he said, that's wonderful. Nice to see young people involved. How much do you need? I said, I'd like $250,000. He says, no problem. For every dollar that they raise, I'll put in two. And the kids raised $175. So I told him we're going to bankrupt him here pretty soon. So he better get ready to give a check for $250. So he did. And so people get inspired that way as well. Sometimes you have to break it down to bite size. You don't want to do this at the beginning. When you're starting a big campaign, don't go for the small dollars at the beginning, because the needle will not move. It's nice to get everybody involved, but needle will not move. So what you have to do is to break it down like this. If we can get 5,000 people in Canada, 5,000 out of what, 65,000 members, maybe? I don't know what the number is now. Around that? Okay. If 5,000 people can give $100 a month, that's $10, $100 one-time donation, not a month, $100 one time, $10 a month, will give you $500,000. So break it down to people in a way that they'll understand that. At the end, towards the end, when you're down, in fact, I didn't launch my mass campaign until this 2 months ago. At homecoming, we launched the campaign, because we only needed at that time $300,000. It was easy to get $3,000. It will be easier to get $300,000 to give $100. And also, another reason you do that is you want to give everybody an opportunity to be part of it. Right? You don't want to just deal with only the people that have money. There are people who give $100. It's big to them, because they're giving that from my sacrifice. When my mother gives $100, she's giving it from a pension money. She's giving it from some extra medicine that she could buy. So one should never stand up here and think that these people don't matter. They want to make a difference. I have ladies who will make sweaters because that's all they can do for my mission work. And I take them, put it in a suitcase and take them, because that's all they can do. And that's what's important. So you deal with the major donors to move the needle. Then you bring everybody else as well. All right, which picture here represents fundraising? And this is my last picture, then I'll open up some. Which of these pictures do you think represent fundraising in some way or another? All of it? All right. The cow does or doesn't? Somebody said all of it. I can hear you. Sure, you can be raising money through these things. All right, let's look at each one carefully. One is on the phone. There's a man on the phone. It's one way to raise money, right? There's another one writing a letter. Okay, that's another common way to raise money. In a very respectful way, if you're going to milk a cow, which tool would you need? Dave, come on. You would need the stool. You cannot write a letter. You cannot make a phone call to the cow and say, give me milk. Right? It doesn't work. You have to pull the stool right under the cow and then start talking to it. Same thing in fundraising. If you want to get people engaged, you have to be in front of them. That's really the illustration of this. All the letter writing and all the phone calls didn't yield as much to me as when I sat down and sat with the cow or the people and said, this is where your vision needs to be for the future of our church and for the future of our young people. Dave used to milk cows, I believe, right? On the barn. So that shows how much I know about milking cows. That's why I'm not in that business. All right. So the idea is get in front of people with your cause. And do not worry. The biggest fear people have is getting in front of people and asking them for money. Tell yourself, this is for a cause. This is not for you. This is to make a difference in people's lives. And you can be part of that journey. And be passionate about that. All right. I think I'm going to stop here for a minute with these last thoughts. Is that open the hearts of people and not just try to open the wallets. If there's one thing you want to take away from here today, try to work on the people before you simply hit them up for money. So I'm going to take some questions, but I do have some materials that I brought that I'm going to show you. I have some free things from Berman to give out, some luggage tags, some pens, and I'll just share this materials here, and you can come and help yourself if you want to. I'm going to show you some things that might be a little bit overwhelming, but I'll tell you how to use this. There's a word in fundraising called a case for support. I never heard it until I got into it myself. A case for support simply means you need to give a case for people to support your cause. That's all it means. But look at this one. There's a fairly elaborate case for support to build the $6 million library. Talks about the library, but it talks about the vision first, the young people, their future, all those kinds of things. And then it talks about the library and the dollars. Do you think you need to spend money like this? How many of you agree or disagree? All right. The question is, it depends on the size of the donation. First of all, I want to tell you, I only printed 50 of these. You don't print mass numbers of this. Why do you print this? If somebody is going to give you $1 million, your campaign better look like it's worth the $6 million. If you just go with a piece of paper, they laugh you right out of the door. Nobody will read this, believe me. They'll just browse it. It'll be a what we call a coffee table book. They'll leave it there. They'll look through it. People will come to their house. They'll say, oh, I'm taking part in this library project. We made 50 of these mainly because we were targeting $100,000 gifts. All right, so you do that. So this is a case for support. But for the rest of the people, we would come up with something very simple like this. Just a one-page brochure. You'll have a little card. You'll have an envelope. Make it easy to give. This is one thing I found out is when you ask people for money, make it so easy to give. Email, e-transfer, put everything on there. Don't let the people second guess. Put a stamp on it. Put the envelope. It's easy for them to write the check and mail it out. All right. Other things would always be a thank you card or an invitation for a function. Brand it all if you're looking for big dollars. Even if you're looking for small dollars, just do it nice and classy so people feel proud of it. It gives you an impression of where you're going. Don't just photocopy some paper and color paper and so on. Take a little time, think it through, and so on. All right, I'm going to stop here and let you ask some questions. My time is out. Oh, okay, there's a mic for questions. Oh, any comments you want to make? Anybody? All right, if you don't have any questions. Oh, give you a chance to think. Yes, all right, I shall do that. While you're doing that, come and help yourself to some things. And I'll give you my email address. Then if you want this presentation, I'll be happy to mail it to you. All right, or you can come and I'll give you one of my cards. Thank you for those that came and those who are listening online, those who joined us at the end. If I can be helpful to you in helping you with fundraising for your church, for your school, for your projects, at least give me a call. It's free. And I can at least point you in some directions. All right, question or comment?
Yes, Eric, maybe you mentioned this and I missed it, which I do a lot of these days. But as far as the campaign is going along, how often should you give a report of what's happening?
For the donors, I try to give one every 3 months.
Yeah.
Where we are at, where we are going. And for the board and my colleagues, they get one every month. The moment the monthly financial report comes out of the donations, and I try to send them a report to keep them focused on it. There's one slide here I have. You reminded me of something. Here's a follow-up. It doesn't have to be this detail, but people like to know that you're heading somewhere, and they'll join you. If you're at zero and you're zero 3 months from now, then the people don't want to see that. As the school, small dollars. Here's a classic example of how you can inspire young people. One I did here a few months ago. This school in Lacombe, public school, elementary school, wanted to raise some money for desks for children in Africa. So they all got together on the left side picture, and you'll see all the children. They did all kinds of things. A month later, or 2 months later, when they got their money, I sent it to Africa, got the pictures from the school in Africa with the desks that your children are sitting on, and I took it back to the school and actually printed a picture of these children sitting at their desk and gave it to every kid in that school. It was like 6 cents to print a postcard picture at London Drugs. And I gave it to every kid to take home. And do you think I'll have trouble going back again next year? There'll be no problem. They already called me and said, what is the next project for next year? Right? Simple things like this can inspire people to do more. Here are some things what not to do. I'm sure you have seen this. Try to don't get into this. It says here, we are saving a life every minute at a cost of only 50 cents a day. People who say these things might be fine for them to say, but in the end, you cannot trust people that exaggerate the stories, right? And tell us of tall tales. It doesn't happen in real life. And with your gift, we'll rescue 10,000 and get them help for life. No, you cannot get help for life for anybody for $10,000. So be realistic, be practical. So don't get into these kinds of exaggerated stories when you're fundraising. If you want to have trust with people, you want to be realistic about it. All right. I think we better wrap it up.
How do you contact people that are long distance? You're raising money in Berman, somebody in Halifax. How do you go about
contacting that person? You don't fly all over the country, do you?
Yeah, good question. No. Especially last 2 years, we couldn't go. Normally, we would go and have local, in Berman's case, chapter meetings. Bring the people together, fire them up to give. Last 2 years, we couldn't, which is why I think it's a miracle that we even got the library paid for to this tune, because we never had a chance to meet people face to face. For those people, letters followed up with a phone call is the best way to deal with them. And in our case, in the Berman's case, you have a list of donors already. And you start with them first. That's your low-hanging fruit. You start picking at them first. And they'll then give you names. And you set up some advisory committees across Canada and say, okay, who are the people there who are engaged with Berman? Can you give us their names? And then you go and visit them or write to them. Phone calls, Zoom calls. We had several Zoom meetings with people. All right. Okay, good. If you want to come and get some materials, feel free to do that. Otherwise, thank you all very much and all the best to you.